It's Thursday, April 22nd, and this is Jeff Schwartz of Smartly with me, Jeff Schwartz. Welcome back, everyone. We will continue to hit the draft hard. It's coming up in just a week, and wow, I can't believe it's going to be here already. I'm tired of the oddness that happens the last couple weeks before the draft where we just talk out of our ass. And we won't talk out of our ass on this show, I promise you. We're going to have Matt Miller of thedraftscout.com. Works for ESPN now, formerly a Bleacher Report. We're going to talk about all things doing with the draft. Again, just touch on everything before we get to the first round. Again, a week from today, second round, third round on Friday, and then the rest of the draft on Saturday. Very quickly, some housekeeping. I promised you guys the offensive line Gruden camp show. It is coming out. It is almost ready to come out. It might be out today, when you listen to this, it might be out Friday. I know for sure it's going to be out the week of the draft. I know that for sure. We got a name. We're ready to go. So be on the lookout on my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz, for that. And on my Instagram, Jeff Schwartz again. We're gonna pimp it out. We're going to pump it out. You promise. It's going to be great. I promised you this. It's going to be fabulous. And you're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's going to go in-depth. X and O's. We're going to have many different versions too. We're going to have a version we're going to air on television, a version we're going to air digitally. We're going to have longer versions digitally as well. So whatever you want the backstory on the players, you want X and O's, it'll all be there. It'll all be there for you guys, and you will truly, truly enjoy it. So look out for that. Again, follow me on social media to get all the details when it finally pops. Maybe, again, by the time you hear this, maybe the name will be released, which I know what it will be. I can't obviously share it quite yet. And you will thoroughly enjoy it. So without further ado, let's get to Matt Miller, talk about the draft, kind of wrap up some loose ends. And lastly, by the way, next week, we will do a full mock draft. Me, Gabe, Matt, Nick, we're all going to do it. We'll lay out our final draft scenarios, trades, where we think guys are going to go. We'll nail it all down after listening to, obviously, we had Dane Brugler on and Matt Bowen on, and now Matt Miller. All our thoughts together. We'll put them together. We'll have a mock draft for you guys next week. We'll have draft reaction as well that we will have hopefully out Friday night, Friday morning after the first round. We'll do all that. So without further ado, here is Matt Miller. Hey, Matt, what's up, buddy? Welcome in.
Yeah, man, it's good to finally make this happen. I know you've been super cool handling my insane schedule. So it's good to be on your podcast for a change.
I am glad to have you. I'm really glad that next time we have dinner, it'll be on ESPN's dime this time. So congratulations, right? on the new job.
I don't know if the ESPN corporate card system works like the Bleacher Report one did, where now you're telling secrets. You know, we had a lot of good dinners together over the years. But, you know, I like to say my thing was, like, I always learned so much from our dinners just to, like, I mean, look at how I'm filling up the frame. Like, you and I can see each other, and I don't fill up the frame like you do. I'd never played offensive line, man. So, like, I learned so much during those very bougie dinners that we would find ourselves in at the Super Bowl every year.
The funny part, it wasn't even, like, bougie. We would go to just, like, a regular place and get, like, a steak. It wasn't like we went to Mastro's
Grill.
And – yeah,
right.
It was like we went to Mastro's and just, like, ate, like, the lobster caviar. So – Well, congrats on the ESPN deal, the new website. Fantastic. Everyone go subscribe. You know, what interests me to start with is kind of your process of building out your prospects list. Because you already came out with a 2022 prospects list. We won't get to that. But, like, so how does the process begin to put together kind of the prospect list kind of heading into, like, the 2021 season? Especially this year was weird because not everyone played this year.
Yeah, and so this 2021 and 2022 are really difficult years to do that. And so for 2021, the normal process, like you said, would start about now, maybe the first week of April, because you start to – that conversation starts with your contacts around the league, and agents are actually – like, people always wonder, like, why do you hang out with agents? They are a great resource of information, especially for things like this. And so there's a lot of us, like, trying to, like, trade information, basically. Like, here's my guys that I'm watching. And they're like, well, hey, have you heard about this guy? And so it's really just like this big network of people that you all try to share information to get that list for next year. Because I need to have 700 players for each draft class to watch, basically. And so you really start by, okay, you talk to scouts that you know, because they're usually a year or two ahead. You talk to agents that you trust, and then you talk to I don't really talk to other people in the media as much as I should, because I think they'd be a better resource. But people can be I don't like protective of their work, and I respect that. So you don't get a whole lot of, like, you know, me and Mel Kiper and Todd McShay aren't sitting down comparing notes for next year's class. Hopefully that does happen. It'd be cool as hell. But, you know, and then I have, you know, I have my assistant, Mello, who's on my podcast with me, who he is a huge resource in that, because he's more of a college football guy while I'm more of an NFL draft and NFL guy. And so what we do is we each combine, like, make a separate list, and then we cross-check those lists. And so I think he told me yesterday he has like 50 more players than I do already. So it's like a competition of, like, who can find more guys. And then you whittle that list down. But it really is everything. I mean, you look at All-American teams from last year. You look at, you know, I even go back sometimes to look at recruiting classes. Like, who were the five and four-star guys? Because, like, Davis Mills from Stanford this year, he fell off the radar for a couple of years. But he was the number one quarterback in his class. It was pretty good when he played. His film's pretty impressive. So really, you just try to get that master list of names, and then you start whittling it down. As you said, 2021 was difficult. Just keeping track, like, the transfer portal has made things really hard to keep track of where guys are at. And like, I know when I put out my first 2021 list, I had so many people be like, that player's not at that school anymore. It's not like laziness on my part. It's really hard to keep track of where all these guys go. And so 2022 will be very difficult as well because of the transfer portal. Because of that super senior eligibility that people got, you know, last year essentially didn't count. And even building out like a final 2021 draft list, the NFL doesn't put out a list of people who are eligible for the draft. It'd be awesome if they did, but they don't. And so I know, you know, in January when I launched my new website, like, I had some guys on there and people were like, hey, he actually went back to school. And it's tough to keep track of it all, especially with a pandemic going on and the NCAA eligibility rules changing. So getting that list right is the hardest part.
Does it always shock you how much the list moves? And I'll give you one example from this year. Well, there's two, really. There's always quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks go, yes, like Joe Burrow shoots up out of nowhere. Baker Mayfield, all these guys shoot up out of nowhere. But like a Gregory Rousseau from this year, right? Now, he didn't play at Miami, but if you looked at the list this time last year, he was a top five draft pick.
Absolutely.
And now maybe goes in the first round, probably not, I think. Yeah. And so, like, does it always shock you how much players move up and down throughout the year? Because if you enter the year as a top five, you almost have to do nothing, like Rousseau didn't play this year, right, to drop so much.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think the hard part for me, because I try to be so interactive in this industry, and that's not a normal thing. The hard part for me is the people who will be like, let's look at your, you know, you and I have a running joke that the day after the draft, I put out a mock draft the next year. People, yes, love that stuff. And you're always like, where's your 2025, lazy? And so the hard thing is the people who will look at that information to use it against you and be like, well, last year at this time, you had Gregory Rousseau as a top five pick. Now he's going to go in the probably, you know, 25 to 35 overall. It's like, okay, that information wasn't wrong. It requires context, you know, and it's predictive. So that's kind of the hard part with that stuff. Like, it is wild how much it changes, especially this year with, you know, you can have Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater not play and it doesn't affect their stock, but you have Gregory Rousseau not play and it has hurt his stock. And some of that was that, you know, the pro day wasn't that good. I think some of it that hurts him as well is that he opted out and the guys who filled in for him, Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche, balled out. Yeah. And so you have to be like, how much of that is scheme produced production? How much of that is player produced production? Because, I mean, as a former offensive lineman, you know, not all sacks are created equal. And so that's where you really have to have the context of scouting to figure out, all right, is this guy legit, or how much of this was just because of the situations he was put in?
Let's talk about just the opting out in general, because I'm in contact with kind of older scouts, and I'm part of this group, whatever, and we hear them talk about it, and, you know, they're kind of against it. Like, the old school, yes, is like, they didn't play, they don't love football. We saw the backlash to Trevor Lawrence's comments that were just as simple as like, I have a work-life balance, and it's okay that I have
Which
a work-life
healthy.
Balance.
Right.
Exactly. So what is it about the opt-outs that has some guys, Penei, Rashawn Slater, Jamar Chase, still top 10 guys, but for other guys, it's really dinged them? It's just as far as like their physical traits for,
yes,
Sewell and Chase,
that's
are so good
is.
They can ignore it.
Exactly. You know, it's that famous line about if Hannibal Lecter ran a 4.4, they'd say he had an eating disorder. You know, it's like, if you're good enough, the NFL doesn't care. And it, like, it just goes back to that. Like, it, you know, and even like, I wrote about this yesterday. I had someone early this week be like, hey, I had a scout say, are you worried about Penei Sewell's character concerns? I was like, what character concerns? Like, well, yeah, you know, he's kind of immature. It's like, he's 20.
He's 20.
He's 20 years old. And so, like, my movement right now is to, like, stop using. And I get it. We're all, like, conditioned to use the terminology that's out there. My, like, I'm trying to stop using the term character concerns. Just, like, let's define it, you know? Like, did the guy punch someone in a bar? Is he late for class? You know, what? Like, what is it? Let's be specific on these things. So, as far as the opt-outs go, you're absolutely right. There is still, like... It's funny in scouting circles. It seems like you're either 25 or you're 55, right? And there aren't as many of the 55 plus guys out there anymore. There's just the job is hard. There's not that much money in it. People wash out pretty quickly. So I think there is still that group that is very much the do you love football? And like, man, that's tough. It's really hard for me to sit here, you know, hopefully on the back end of a global pandemic and say, you didn't play football last year. You don't love football. Like, we, again, context is a huge word for me in terms of evaluating. You have to understand why. You know, Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech opts out because he has a family member who I believe is diabetic and, yeah, you know, severely diabetic. And he was worried about that. Like, remember where we all were over the summer? Like, I understand now, like, I live somewhere where people are pretty loose about things, you know, yeah, COVID related. But over the summer, this stuff was still very terrifying. You know, yeah, and there wasn't the hope inside of a vaccine. And so it's hard for me to sit here remembering how, you know, altered my life was and how protective I was of my parents who were elderly or not elderly. I don't want my mom to listen to this and kick my ass, who were a little bit older, you know, and so you were so worried about them. It's like, if I had opted out of going into work every day and just wanted to do my job from home, no one would have said anything. They'd be like, yeah, take care of your family. But because this 20-year-old who's playing a sport for free said, nah, I'm a little worried about my family. That means he doesn't love football. Like, I don't get that. Yeah. I think, you know, it, and that is legit. You know, it is like that. I do understand that you have to find out if players love football. I have a saying, do they love playing football or do they love being a football player? Because there's status that comes with being a football player, whether it's on in college or in the NFL, there's money that comes with it in the NFL. And I think you can actually have some success not truly loving the game, but being really good at it. But at some point, like, you probably will face some adversity, and if you love the game or not will matter. I think what we should be looking for is situations like Isaiah Wilson last year. Coming out of Georgia, he was a young player, and you really didn't hear a whole lot negative about him, but he played 4 snaps this year for the Titans, and he's not in the NFL right now. So that's the kind of stuff you have to look for. Not did a dude opt out because his, you know, grandmother's diabetic, but does this dude go to practice? Does he do the little things? Does he show up for weight room? Does he show up for position meetings? I think there are a lot of other ways to find out if an athlete really loves football or not.
I'm glad you mentioned the character thing. So obviously Dan Orlovsky, we've discussed on the podcast before, you know, kind of attacked Justin Fields' character, not personally himself, but he said, hey, I've been hearing about this. And we all hear this. We all hear things about certain players. Yeah. You mentioned Penei Sewell, immature, 20 years old. I find it so hard to have those discussions because unless I hear that directly from a coach, and even then it's sort of like, I don't know if I...
Definitely a bias at times, right?
How do you sift through that when you hear like a character concern about this guy or a character concern? I don't even talk about it. I rarely ever mention it. And almost because I feel like they're still in college and they're not getting paid to play football. I feel like I stay away from it. How do you decide what character concerns for players are ones you're willing to share?
Yeah, that's it. I really respect your approach to that, and I'm a little jealous of it, to be honest. I have really, over the last 2 years, I try not to bring it up unless I'm directly asked. You know, famously or infamously, last year, there was a wide receiver at the University of Minnesota named Tyler Johnson, who folks on Twitter thought was going to be a first-round pick. And it's toward the middle to end of the year, people were noticing that I had him ranked pretty low. I had him in day 3, and people online thought he was round 1. So that's a big discrepancy. So people were asking me, like, why are you so low on him? And I said, well, the feedback I have from scouts who've gone through there is that there are some character concerns. People ask, what are they? Again, immaturity, maybe a work ethic thing. And this is all what I've heard from multiple scouts. So that's kind of my rule is anymore, like, I'm not going to bring up something unless I'm asked about it, or unless we have to explain why someone is falling in the draft. And even then, like, I really want to define it, you know, and it's funny. People have a very short memory about things. All they remember is you say character concerns. They don't see the follow-up where you were like, here's what they are. And so, you know, like Penei this year, or you hear about Christian Barmore, who's kind of hard to coach, you know, maybe had a – and he also had a pretty bad pro day. But those are things you can point to and say, okay, people within the Alabama staff and scouts are saying, hey, this guy's young. He's kind of hard to coach. Maybe that can change. Or like Micah Parsons, you know, there's the quote unquote character concerns because he was kind of a knucklehead in high school, got in a little bit of trouble, got 3 days out of school suspension. He was, you know, kind of picking on hazing someone early in his Penn State career. I don't know that that makes you a bad person. I just think it makes you a kid, you know, and there's a difference. Like, we've seen players who have sexually assaulted people. We've seen players who have domestic violence allegations. And again, it goes back to, if you're good enough, people don't talk about it. You know, I mean, it is tough. It is one of those things, like, it's just unfortunate that you have to talk about it, and there's not a right or good way to go about it. So I've tried to just stay out of it. And if next Thursday there's a player who starts falling in the draft, and that's when it is my job to reach out and find out, okay, why did this player fall? Yeah. Is it injury related? Is it off field related? Or I'll never forget, a couple of years ago, I texted a scout. It was like, why is so-and-so falling down the board? And he replied back, because he's not good at football. I was like, oh, okay.
that's very fair. Just, right. He had him higher. Do you find that your rankings by this time right now, your big board, does it generally line up? Like, do you do a post-draft kind of synopsis and like figure out where, does it line up pretty well with where NFL teams end up taking the players? Now, obviously not 1 through 300, yeah, but you know, if you have a fourth round grade on someone, they're either in the fourth or fifth round, like somewhere around there.
For the most part, I think it's honestly a lot harder to get, like, because in day three, teams have, you know, just wildly different values on people, you know? And so that's where it gets a little bit harder. Like, you'll have a round seven on a guy who goes round four and you're like, okay, well, I understand that. I think I don't aim for a consensus at all. Like, I do send my list to some scouts who I really trust. And my approach is, who am I high and who am I low on? That's the feedback I want. Like, I'm not looking for them to change my mind. I'm just trying to understand like what the perception is on players. It takes a lot for me to move a player up, basically. Like, and you know, like, it's football. We all argue about everything all the time. Yeah. It's like, just in the last 2 weeks, I had someone like convince me I was wrong about a player, and they did that by, go watch this game and like, watch this. I was like, okay. But it can't just be, well, so-and-so is going to be a first round pick. Like, every year there's a pick in the first round that I disagree with. Last year it was Damon Arnett. Here's my number 100 overall player, and the Raiders took him in the first round. Yeah. So, like, I'm not going to put him in my top 32 just because he's going to be a first-round pick. That's not how it works for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun to look at. And the Raiders seem to be that team every year, right? I mean, Henry Ruggs was overdrafted a little bit. Arnett, Colin Farrell was overdrafted. Cleveland Farrell was overdrafted. I'm sure they'll overdraft someone at some point this year. But let's turn attention to the draft. We know Lawrence is one. Zach Wilson's presumably two. Very quickly before we talk about the third pick, Zach Wilson, I don't know, man. I feel like people are going in on this kid. I don't know. I mean, someone said he reminds them of like Steph Curry shooting threes. I'm like, what are we doing here, guys? What's your take on Zach Wilson? I do worry. Lower conference, great offensive line, didn't play very, you know, talented defenses. Mm-hmm. You know, all the highlights of him are making these off schedule throws. That's not really how you win in the NFL. So Zach Wilson, second pick overall, what's your take on him?
I am with you 100%. And I was at the BYU Pro Day. I enjoyed being around Zach. You know, he's confident. He's kind of gritty, which I like. But yeah, you have to worry about. I always say there are unanswerable questions when you are talking about evaluating players. So you can answer some things, height, weight, arm strength, speed. You can answer that stuff. The unanswerable questions are, why did he improve so much this year? Was it because of the offensive line? Was it because like everything clicked and slowed down for him? Or was it because of COVID they played a cupcake schedule? You know, like, I'm sorry, UT San Antonio and like North Alabama aren't putting a lot of guys into the NFL. If you go back to 2019, you know, Washington, Utah, Tennessee, decent programs, he really struggled against them. So that's the hard part, is figuring out what connected. As you mentioned, that offensive line does not get enough credit. Brady Christensen's a stud, and he played in a lot of clean pockets. And as you mentioned, most of what he does is off platform. And while we all love Patrick Mahomes, him and Aaron Rodgers are really the only guys doing it off platform at a high level. You know, for every Patrick Mahomes, there's a Drew Locke. For every Aaron Rodgers, there's a Kyler Murray. You know, there's a lot of players who aren't having success with that. So that's the hard part for me. It's not even about like the is he mentally tough enough to handle New York? Like, that's a whole different animal. Like, is he, you know, is he going to be able to process what he's seeing from defenses? And does the YOLO ball stuff work in the NFL?
And what's interesting about Pat Mahomes is that I actually can make the argument that he needs to stop doing that so much
and
get back on schedule.
Actually, yes. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, people always ask, like, well, how can someone like that improve? And I think this offseason, the improvement is more on schedule, more in rhythm in offense. Andy Reid and him have got to find a way to bring the short passing game back, get him in more of a rhythm, take away the, you know, the exposure to hits. I think at times last year, he got flustered by his offensive line, but also just didn't take what was there for him. Easy throws. He tried to make home runs. And so the YOLO ball works well, you know, within the structure of your offense. But if it is your offense, it doesn't work well.
It helps a lot. Right.
Yeah. Like, and Travis Kelce, who's always open, like, and the ability to run. And look, and when Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz are there, makes it much easier too, because you do have time to make that happen
when you don't have
that time otherwise.
There, right. And that's not a knock on Patrick at all. It's just.
No, but everyone has to work on
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Everyone has areas they can improve. Yeah.
And that's his. All right. Let's get to number three pick. So you have Mac Jones going third, I believe. You're one of the first people, I believe, on this Mac Jones going to the third overall to the Niners train. I don't know if you have Mac Jones rated as your third quarterback. I don't think you do.
No.
But my argument for this is what I don't get is this. One thing is that the Niners, I don't know if they've specifically told you or heard from someone else. Them leaking this out to me feels odd, but nonetheless, we'll ignore that. But secondly, the argument is this that I hear from people, right? Well, Kyle Shanahan's offense, his dad, Mike Shanahan's offense, it's always worked well with average trait quarterbacks. It's made them excel, right? It's taken them from like middle tier to upper tier in the NFL. We've seen Cousins have some seasons like that. Jimmy G. No, Matt Ryan, though, has an elite arm. So I kind of want to throw him maybe out of the conversation, but he did have his best season with Kyle. So therefore, he should take the lesser trait quarterback in Mac Jones because it's going to work in this offense. Well, shouldn't it work with a better trait quarterback in Justin Fields or Trey Lance? Like, I don't, if it's that quarterback friendly. So the Niners trading up to three, giving away draft picks, to me, it doesn't feel like Mac Jones. Why would they take Mac Jones over these other two quarterbacks?
It doesn't make sense. I can't sit here and defend it to you because it doesn't make sense to me either. He's my number 27 overall player. He's my fifth quarterback. So if they draft him at three, that will be a huge discrepancy. And like, I feel bad because I don't want to be that person who's like, Mac Jones is bad. Mac Jones is actually good. He's a good player. He really is. He's very, very smart. He processes the field really well. He's very accurate. All he's done is win. But I'm with you. If your scheme's that good, that you can make average quarterbacks good and good quarterbacks great, why not roll the dice on someone who brings more of a run element to your offense? Someone like, I mean, I love Justin Fields. I really do. And I know he has flaws as well. So does Trey Lance. But their flaws can be fixable. Like, their ceiling is exceptionally high. I feel like Mac Jones is at his ceiling. Like, smart guys can get a little bit smarter. The game can slow down a little bit more. But you're still, like, his arm is what it is, and it's not great. So, like, there are limitations to what he'll be able to do. And I think his ceiling is probably, like, Kirk Cousins minus the turnovers, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worth three first-round picks, but it's pretty good. So that is the hard part, Jeff. And I think that's why so many people are talking about it constantly is – because we all have a hard time wrapping our heads around the idea that they traded up this high to draft a quarterback who is not valued thereby. I don't know anyone who has him ranked inside their top five overall players.
Something you mentioned that's very important to discuss here. When we say a player shouldn't be taken at third, it does not mean they suck. And you mentioned that. It's very important. But guys, there's a value assigned to every draft pick, right? So if you're the third pick overall, there's a certain attachment to that pick of value. Yep. If you're the 20th pick overall, there's an attachment to that as well. So we're saying a guy like Mac Jones would be reasonable to go 15. That's kind of where we think his value is, not three. Add in the two first round picks Niners traded away, and that's where you end up with this kind of idea of maybe not the third pick overall, but maybe the 15th pick. It doesn't mean we think Mac Jones sucks. I think Mac Jones could be good in the NFL. Is he going to win a Super Bowl? It would seem unlikely. Maybe he goes somewhere, and maybe the Patriots end up trading up to four and taking Mac Jones if the Niners take Lance or Fields. The most fun in the draft as of right now, scenario-wise, is the Falcons at four.
Yes.
Right? They can do many things. It depends on how they feel about Matt Ryan. What do you think they should do at number four?
I think they should draft Kyle Pitts, and they should do it about 3 seconds after they come on the clock. Like, Matt Ryan's 35, almost 36. They play in a dome. You know, it's not like he's out in Chicago just getting his ass kicked by the weather, you know, and he's been relatively healthy. I know there was like the little back thing. Was that last year? You know, like
he's much better than people think.
Like, I agree.
He's had a good career.
Right. Yeah. He's had a very good career. Like, trust me, as a lifelong Niners fan, you would take that all day, every day. Right. And so, yeah, I think you just take Kyle Pitts. That's the answer to most questions for me in the top 10. Like, what should this team do? Is Kyle Pitts available? You know, it's like the flow chart thing. Like, should you do this? The first drop down from the should you do this for me is Kyle Pitts available? If the answer is yes, draft Kyle Pitts. If not, then you have to figure something else out. But, man, he's crazy good, and I don't know how defenses are going to deal with him. I know everybody's like, bracket coverage. Okay, cool. You're assigning two defenders to a tight end. I'm going to tear you apart underneath if you do that all day, every day. So have fun with it.
I'm with you there. I mean, the matchup nightmare, and people have floated the Niners taking him just to screw with teams. I mean, that would be, obviously, you can't trade two first-round picks for Pitts. Maybe you can. That
would be better to trade two first-round picks for Mac Jones.
Fair enough. What surprises do you think that we have in store? We'll be a week away by the time this airs for the draft. Feels like everyone wants to trade down after the Falcons, which trading down is never a bad thing, except the Bengals. The Bengals are staying at five, I believe. Is that really what we're going to see? A lot of teams trading down, and maybe the Broncos and Panthers and Washington trading up for quarterback?
I think I understand right now it's the time of year where everyone has to put out the X team wants to trade down. I'm sure they all do, because everyone wants that haul of future draft capital, especially with it's been very well reported by people like Kalen Kaler that this year's draft class is very small. And there's just the difficulties of evaluating this year. So I think everybody wants more picks next year when the class is going to be bigger and you can actually be on campus evaluating players. But like, it takes someone wanting to trade up for you to trade down. And I think that's what people have to remember. It's like the Giants want to trade down. Okay, cool. Who wants the 11th pick? The quarterbacks are going to be gone. The tackles are going to be gone. There are no edge rushers. So like, why would you want to trade up to 11? You know, so I think that's the thing right now that everybody has to remember and like pump the brakes on is, yes, your team probably would like to trade down, but why? Why would someone want to trade up? And I think, as you mentioned, after the quarterbacks are gone, after those five quarterbacks are gone, there's not a whole lot to trade up for this year, you know, especially with Devontae Smith, you know, being basically a high school freshman at 166 pounds. There's just not that other player that you want to move up the board for.
Yeah, that's it's kind of an interesting draft. There's a lot of depth, but you know, after the maybe the top four or five guys, it's not, you know, teams aren't trading up for those guys. The story broke this week, I guess. The Steelers may be taking a running back at 24. Where do you stand on the idea of running back value in the draft and where they should go?
Yeah, I'm okay with drafting a running back in the back half of round one because you're a playoff team at that point. You're probably just trying to plug a hole to get over the top. We saw Kansas City do it last year with Clyde. So I'm okay with it. I'm just against second contracts for running backs. Like, if you want to draft a running back in the first round at pick 24 overall, you have 5 years of a very inexpensive, very crucial part of your offense, especially if they can catch the football like Najee Harris can from Alabama. I think that could be smart team building. The key is after 5 years and maybe 1 year under the franchise tag, you have to let them walk. You can't look at, okay, this guy's been in the league 6 or 7 years. Now let's give him a second contract that's $15 million a year. I don't think that's very smart team building, and I don't know that there's an example of it working. You know, even like Ezekiel Elliott hasn't really been the same guy on his second contract. Christian McCaffrey gets a second contract, boom, out for the year. So it's just – it's hard for me to justify paying someone such a large percentage of the salary cap when you can probably get that job done with two players who would cost less. Or I think if you're good at evaluating talent and drafting – you can just recycle that player every 5 to 6 years. You know, teams are not meant to be together for 10 years. You really should be recycling your team every 4 years. And so I think the running back position should be a part of that. So if I ever, you know, get that call to jump from ESPN to running a team, which probably won't happen, I'm too controversial. But I mean, that would be my strategy is, hey, we're going to draft a good running back and he's going to be here for 5 to 6 years. Then we're going to move on and get another one. And I think the receiver position should be viewed the same way outside of, you know, Larry Fitzgerald and Julio Jones. Wide receiver value to me is just crazy. Like, Ja'Marr Chase is really good. I understand drafting him early. There's just not a lot of hits in first round wide receivers. I think that's the position where we like the Tennessee Titans. They get AJ Brown in the second round. Great value. And he's inexpensive for 4 years. He's a great player. And then, you know, you're not upside down on your value with him.
Let's end with this. A couple guys you think might sneak in the first round that might surprise. The two names I've heard most Davis Mills out of Stanford and Joe Tryon from Washington. I do think Brady Christensen could maybe sneak in there for the Chiefs at 31. Who are a couple guys you hearing that might be called Thursday that might be surprises for the casual fan?
Andy Reid drafting a BYU offensive tackle would be the most Andy Reid thing ever. So I like that one.
I feel like because Chiefs fans keep thinking like tackle feels like the position they have to draft, and maybe you overdraft at that spot. You need that guy, right?
I don't hate it.
And it feels like at 31, the top three tackles are gone. AVT's gone. He plays guard in the NFL anyways, I think. It's like who's Leatherwood's probably a guard, right, in the NFL?
Yeah,
like who's and Christensen's athletic numbers. I mean, Walker Little feels like another Mitch Schwartz, like my brother. So like that might be it. But that's still early at 31 and draft guys haven't played in 2 years.
Right.
So who are a couple guys you think that sneak up in that first round? People are like, huh, how'd that guy go so high?
Yeah, I like your picks there a lot. I'll say Levi Onwuzurike, the defensive lineman from Washington. I think he I think he'll go first round. I feel pretty good about that one. Yeah, I think he will. It's a bad
D-line. He set out this year too, right?
He did. Yeah, I think that probably
And Joe Tryon, both guys set out. And we were like, what are they doing?
Washington's going to be terrible is what we were saying. Another one, I'm trying to think of people who aren't like common. I'll say Pat Freiermuth, the tight end from Penn State, also goes, if he doesn't go round one, he'll go 33.
Okay. So interesting. Yeah.
I try not to be like, Jameen Davis from Kentucky. It's like, yeah, everyone knows that. You know, he's not a household name, but like he'll be a first round pick, you know. So try to stay away from the maybe obvious ones.
What are you doing on a draft now? You gonna be with ESPN's coverage or you have your own thing going?
I'll be in Cleveland. My job this year as the new guy is to do a lot of the day of stuff. You know, so get up, SportsCenter, NFL Live. And then night of the draft, I think I will probably be chilling in my hotel room, just blasting picks on Twitter and trying to, you know, it's been since 2010 was the last time I watched the NFL draft, like watched it on television. So I'm kind of excited about that. I'm a little sad about it too. Like it's a little weird, but when you're asked to do like, hey, all day throughout the draft, you want to be on SportsCenter and get up and NFL Live, like you don't say no to that, you'd be an idiot, right? As someone who dreamed of this as a child, like, hey, do you want to be on ESPN all day of the draft? Yes, I want to do that. So night of the draft, I don't know exactly yet what I'll be doing. Something.
Are you gonna tip picks?
No, I can't anymore.
Can't go to Matt's Twitter, have him tip picks anymore.
Right.
Company policy. Big dog now, man.
Right.
Big dog.
On the Bleacher Report coverage, I used to be like two picks ahead of the stream on TV. And some people loved it. Some people hated it. But I know our producers of Bleacher Report loved it. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It is hard when you're doing like – I'm doing a draft show for Fox. It is hard when you're doing it kind of live and you're looking at Twitter and you're like three picks behind. You're like, I already know what's happening. I have to act surprised that this weird thing just happened.
Yes. Yep, exactly. So I'll probably be on Twitter just like – analyzing the picks or telling people kind of what I'm hearing, things like that would be my best guess. Unless, you know, I mean, that I keep telling them, like, I'm in the bullpen. You know, somebody gets the sniffles, call me up. I'll be ready to go.
Fantastic. All right, Matt, I know you have to run. Thank you for coming on today at NFL Draft Scout, thedraftscout.com, and now ESPN. Really appreciate it, buddy. Go have fun at ESPN today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you. Talk soon.
Thank you, Matt, for coming on. That was fabulous as usual. Matt is just the best. I've known him for a long time now and works his butt off, man. He's one of the best in the industry, is getting sources and figure out where teams and what teams are going to do in the draft. Please rate, review, subscribe. Really appreciate getting the feedback on this. It helps, obviously, the podcast just be a better podcast. Always appreciate any feedback. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Take care, everyone.